I'm gonna begin just by ringing the bell. So just to call us in, call us home. There's some activity obviously outside of in the neighborhood. Okay. Isn't it amazing? We hear the sound of the bell, those of us who have been practicing for some time, and immediately we click into a sense of being called home to ourselves. Not, the Pavlovian thing of habit and all of that, but it brings us into a sense of wakefulness. And this is something that we share as a sangha. This is something that we share as a community. I'm really happy to be with you for the next hour. I'm really feel pleased that that I was asked to talk this afternoon. And it's wonderful for me to see those of you who I know, really know, and then those of you who are new to me. And we kind of come together as community in these kinds of contexts where we are really bringing our attention to the Dharma, to the truth of things, and greater and greater love for the truth of things. But we need each other. We need each other too. Be in this practice with. I don't know if it's because of my friendship with Rodney or because of the fact that I've always found that the Northeast and the Northwest, there's a kind of a similarity of sensibility. And so when I read the write-up about my being here today, I was really happy because I do feel in your family. I do feel that SIMS, Seattle Insight Meditation Society, is very much my family too, and that you are my family. So I thought, what better than to talk to family about home? That's what I want to talk about today, about having a spiritual abode, which is what is, I think, from what everything I hear, quite competently being planned and kind of put into reality. So any way that I can help this, I want to. As maybe everyone knows, I'm a guiding teacher at the Cambridge Insight Meditation Center in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And I've been there since the beginning, which is 36 years now. The times are really interesting to me. I mean, it's hard for me to imagine, just this thing of 36 years, but I have been there for 36 years. I was part of its founding. And you all have rented places and made different places your home and then had to leave and all of that. I've followed your roots. And for me, having the beautiful building that we have, I don't know if anyone or any of you or many of you have been to CIMC in Cambridge, but it's a beautiful building. And the plan for what you have going is for people to be able to come and sit every day for some hours every day at least. And that's what we have been so fortunate to have over all these years is a beautiful, it's really beautiful building in which yogis, yoginis, practitioners can come and practice on their own. I mean, we have a lot going on, as you do too. But in terms of being able to go to this beautiful building for refuge, it is possible to do that. It's the way churches used to be when more of them were open, where you could just go into a church whenever you wanted to. And you know, whether you were Catholic or not, you could go into a church and just have a sense of space and calm and wonderment. I know that these things are somewhat complicated, dependent on your upbringing and all of that. I know for me, churches, when I was small, were really a refuge. Nothing about it, just the space itself, was wonderful, wonderful spaces in which I could be alone and I could be in solitude and I could just enjoy being instead of having to get something done or having to be somebody. I felt like I could really relax. I could really relax. CIMC has been closed because of the pandemic for a while now, and we're just beginning to open up again. I went over to sit and walk in the hall, the upper hall, which has very high ceilings, and it's a third floor and sense of spaciousness in the middle of Cambridge. And it just hit me, the sense of beauty and emptiness and compassion and wonderment. I walked in and it hit me. And the reason why, I think, is because so much practice has happened there. And we have a sense of community, being together and practicing together. You all have had to hold it all as a community with, I know, ups and downs. You have had to hold it all without a building in which you can come to rest. So I'm just really happy that this is happening and that you will have a building that you can make your own. Sometimes these days, I don't know, you know, maybe pre-pandemic, actually, this was more spoken about. But this idea of a third place, that one has one's home, one has one's workplace, and then there's a third place. That third place for some people might be a bar or a community center or maybe one friend's house or something like that. Meditation centers can be that. Meditation centers can be a third place, a place where you're at home and where there's something familiar about it, the way there is in your physical home and the way it may be at work for you. That a meditation center as well is a place where you can find yourself at home. Meditation centers, though, are fantastic because nothing is really yours. You know, the phone rings and you don't have to be bothered with answering it. The food in the refrigerator, you don't have to be thinking about whether you can go to that refrigerator or not. The cushions, you come in and you can probably just take any cushion you want or take any chair that you want. And so there's something quite wonderful about it because it's yours and it's not yours. One makes oneself at home, approaches it as a place of calm and a sense of the sacred, and yet at the same time, you don't have to be preoccupied with all of the familiar things that might drag you into familiar habits and patterns. Meditation centers, buildings, help us to break those patterns because we're not surrounded by our usual things and tchotchkes and things on the walls and all of that. You know, we're just there within the space and with the beings that are with us in that space. So there's something really, truly wonderful about it. And I'm saying this from the perspective of 36 years in really quite a beautiful building, a wonderful building. And I want to welcome you to come visit once you feel that it's safe to travel and you can come cross country. Come and visit when you can. So let's sit for a little bit together right now. And then I'll talk more about Sangha and community. That's what I want to focus on today. So please to come into your body, show up in your body, allowing this online context to be as intimate or even more intimate than being together in person. Being in the body, unifying the mind with the body, so there is a sense of oneness, of steadiness, of calm, of groundedness within your body. Feel the posture of sitting. Experience the posture of sitting and be aware of what you're sitting on. Not so much the concept or appearances of floor, meditation mat, chair, bed, etc., etc., but more so the sense of the contact between the body and whatever the body is resting upon right now. Aware of the whole body just sitting here. Relaxing the body without forcing or striving, trying to make yourself relaxed, inviting relaxation instead. The light touch of the breath. This very in-breath, this very out-breath, welcoming and letting go, releasing, relinquishing. Relaxing the whole body from the top of the head to the tips of the toes. The eyes, area around the eyes and behind the eyes. The face, facial muscles. The shoulders, let the shoulders down. The weight of the world is not on any one of us. We are sharing it. So allow the shoulders to relax and to come down. Let your limbs relax, the arms and legs, the hands and feet, the fingers and the toes. Allow the diaphragm to soften, and in particular, softening the belly, softening the lower abdomen right now, if you can. If you can't, not a problem. Let it soften on its own over time. Whole body relaxed, whole body awareness. Inclusive of whatever sounds are happening right now, allowing thoughts to come and go. Allowing emotions, mental states too. Be known, recognized, welcomed. In this ungraspable spaciousness, infinite space of awareness, room for everything to come and to go, to arise and to go on its way according to its laws, not our ideas, concepts, views, opinions about what should happen. as the body relaxes, as the mind stills itself, maybe something else has room to bubble up, to emerge. Maybe there's a sense, an awareness of something soft, something tender, something warm, perhaps originating in the heart area, the chest area, perhaps not locatable. And yet recognizable as affection, unconditional affection. Sensing this affection, loving kindness in relationship to yourself, the expression of it being the allowing of all things to be right now, peacefully abiding in the here and now. Maybe you can sense this affection, this unconditional affection, warmth, kindness. Maybe you can sense it inclusive of everyone here right now, gathered together. This Sangha, this community, living and breathing right now, and sensing yourself as belonging, even if you're completely new to the practice or new to Sims, belonging, allowing yourself to belong, and making a space for all who are here to belong as well. Expanding beyond this community gathered together right now, and expanding this unconditional affection to all of your Dharma siblings, making space for your Dharma siblings to belong. ever-increasing circles of affection, unconditional affection to every life right now, the sacred spark in everyone. Allowing, encouraging, a belonging. May all beings peacefully abide in the here and now. May all beings rest, find refuge in loving kindness. May all beings live with a leap of trust and with compassion. Okay. I realize it's, 12:30 for you there? It's 3:30 here, and it is lunch. So this is Dharma food, you know, nourishment, as Ajahn Chah would say. One of his books, collection of his teachings, is food for the heart. So this is food for our hearts. And I hope that you have time to eat as well. Some physical food, some food for your body as well. So it seems to be true that we need each other to be able to continue on with this practice. That being on one's own, and some people really are on their own, and then they find themselves at a center a long time into when they have begun their practice. And, certain qualities have been developed, certainly self-reliance and this and that. But always when I bump into people who don't have a community and don't have teachers, there's a bit of a sense of disconnection and confusion. It seems that we need one another to continue with this practice. I remember for myself sitting a long retreat in my early years of the practice and coming out of it a bit discombobulated. It was a powerful retreat, changed my life. It was one of those kinds of experiences, but it was also really discombobulating. Can happen at times. And what kept me in there were my friends, my Dharma friends that I had made before I went into this retreat. That's what kept me going, was knowing that, you know, I would lose all my friends if I didn't keep practicing, because what do we talk about? We talk about practice in one way or another. And so it really was beautiful to me that I felt held by my friends until the next phase of practice happened and I felt put back together in a more open-hearted and sane way. I used to know about a yogi who practiced. He lived for a very long time, and the story is that he practiced out in a forest for years and years and years by himself. And when he came out, he was, you know, really in great shape. He was really quite awake. But most of us would not happen to, you know, for most of us, we would probably not come out of a long-term time in the forest more awake than when we came in. Some of us would, but probably not many of us. We need one another to practice. And we also, in being in contact with each other, we are also helping each other. We're not just getting and receiving and being helped by others, by our friends and our Dharma siblings. We are also helping others simply by showing up, simply by being present with one another. We are helping each other. The Zen master Dogen said, we can help each other by combining our strengths as we practice. So one very real thing that happens that we all know about and we can all check out is that when we are practicing together, sitting together, whether online or in person, and we feel restless or bored or a lack of faith, doubt, when we feel fatigued or anxious or depressed or any of the kinds of things we might feel, we open our eyes and we recognize, oh, everybody else is still here. Everybody else has continued to practice and has held me silently in a way that I might not have appreciated before. But we recognize this fact, and it's something that does allow us to have the pleasure of gratitude, the meditative pleasure of appreciation. We can use the example of a fire where one log on that fire certainly is nice light. It's a beautiful light when we light one log on fire. It's better than not, you know, it's a good light. But then when we add more and more logs to that fire, the fire burns ever more brightly. And this is what happens when we practice together as a collective, as a community. The fire burns ever more brightly. Some of you know, and some of you are in this class, I have a class I've had going for maybe 25, 30 years now, maybe 30 years. And I used to call it the Old Yogis. And I really liked that because I could write down OI in my calendar. But then younger people wanted to join this class and they didn't want to be called Old Yogis. So because of popular appeal, I changed it to Experienced Practitioners. And so now, for quite a long time, it's been the Experienced Practitioners group. And recently, I've been calling it kind of those who are seasoned, you know, the seasoned practitioners. And I was speaking about this when Tim and I taught together recently at Cloud Mountain, and he picked up on it and kind of related to it or referred to it as seasoned wood could catch fire at any moment, could catch fire at any moment. And to me, of course, what that means is we don't know from moment to moment. We just practice the best we are able to, the best we can with sincerity. And we don't know what we will learn, how we will understand things differently, how insights can deepen and take us to a completely different place, how this process of letting go of the torments of heart, of greed and hatred and delusion, how that will disperse within our hearts, when that will disperse within our hearts, we don't know. But we can have trust that this is the beautiful path that we are on. We are on this path of awakening, and we are awakening together. We are sharing a dedication to awakening. We are sharing a dedication to awareness. We are preferencing awareness over pretense or things that aren't true, even if they feel better. Things that aren't true are not anything that can sustain and be truly beneficial. This dedication is one of shared values. You know, we love what we know are called the paramis, the virtues. And this is something that we encourage one another in on this path. We love ethics and a sense of doing our best to not cause harm with our actions and with our speech. We love generosity and open-heartedness and dana. We love renunciation. Well, maybe we don't always love renunciation, but we might love letting be. Maybe a little bit better word right now, letting be and letting go. We love wisdom. We love wisdom. We love energy and wise efforts. We love patience. We love truthfulness. We love resolve. We love love. We love metta and friendliness. And we love an inner balance of being. These are things that as Dharma siblings, we collectively appreciate. I don't meet anybody on this path who says, you know, there's something wrong with truthfulness, or there's something wrong with wisdom, or I want to be in denial and confusion my whole life. I never meet anybody like that. Everybody I meet on this path is sincere and has a shared sense of what is beautiful and a shared sense of wanting to move in the direction of the ever more beautiful as well. The Buddha spoke about the importance of noble friendship and suitable conversation. And this means that with our Dharma siblings, friends, teachers, mentors, our Dharma world, our Dharma community, or Dharma Sangha, we are able to talk with one another about what matters. I do meet people all the time who, when they begin this path, they can't really talk in quite the same way many times to family and friends. And it's not that anybody is, you know, unless it's completely appropriate, it's not that anybody is moving away from family or friends. But at the same time, there can be a time period where you feel a little bit like you're understanding something different, something new, and you need to be able to talk with others about it. And so finding a Dharma family along with your family and group of friends is really something essential on this path. Being respectful and compassionate and present. As Rumi said, our friendship is made of being awake. You know, we have other friends in our lives, old friends perhaps, or childhood friends, or this or that. Those friends are not always friendships of being awake. And that is what is different as a Sangha, as Dharma siblings, is our friendships are made of being awake, and we can help each other to awaken even more. I found this haiku, an anonymous haiku, that said, the role of the friend is to be present, patient, and compassionate. The role of the friend is to be present, patient, and compassionate. And so, in our efforts in friendship and in the friends that we find for ourselves on this path, really valuing presentness, valuing compassion, valuing patience, and personal relationships really matter. I've always thought at CIMC, if I weren't in my role there, if I weren't there to teach, that I probably would come in and just try to find a few personal friends, personal friendships that are friends that really encourage greater wakefulness, are friendships of patience and compassion and presentness, are really important. Not just this kind of diverse sense of Sangha, but also making friends, finding friends, and reaching out to find friendships with those that we might not find in other contexts in our lives. But this, to me, is what keeps a Sangha together, where there is enjoyment of each other. It's not of everybody, of course, because of personalities, you know, chemistry, that kind of thing. But to find some personal friends in a Sangha, in a community, it's really what helps to keep a community strong, especially when going through difficulties, to have those personal friendships in which there is a growing sense of trust. The root of the word friendship is to love freely. And so that brings us into the dimension of discerning love from possessiveness, love from attachment, love from clinging and too tight of a hold. And I think with spiritual friendships, we can experiment with what loving freely means. When you have a building, it's really different than not, because you're coming to that building and others are coming to that building, and some of those who are coming to that building, you do have this natural feeling about or trust of or a kinship with. And others, maybe you have some history with, or there's some rub with, or something like that. And that is all part of Sangha. That is all part of our path. I'd like to read you a story about squashes. And the kind of the moral of this story is that if a squash can do it, we can too. Behind a temple, there was a field where there were many squashes growing on a vine. One day, a fight broke out among them, and the squashes broke up into two groups and made a big racket, shouting at each other. The head priest heard the uproar and, going out to see what was going on, found the squashes quarreling. In his booming voice, the priest scolded them. He said, "Hey, squashes, what are you doing out there fighting? Everybody meditate. Meditate right now." The priest taught them how to meditate. "Fold your legs like this. Sit up and straighten your back and neck." While the squashes were meditating in the way the priest had taught them, their anger subsided and they settled down. Then the priest quietly said, "Please, everyone, put your hand on top of your head." When the squashes felt the tops of their heads, they found some weird string attached there. It turned out to be a vine that connected them all together. "Hey, this is really strange," the squashes said. "Here we've been arguing when actually we are all tied together and living just one life. What a mistake. It's just as the priest said." After that, the squashes all got along with each other quite well. And as I said, you know, the moral of the story is that if a squash can do it, we can certainly do it too. We need each other, not just the beauty and the pleasure of companionship, which is no small thing. It is a beautiful thing in this life. But we also need each other so that we can learn deeply and once and for all that we are living just one life. We are all in this life together. And to know this in a kind of closed situation, which is open, you know, like sanghas are closed, they're intact, and at the same time, they're constantly flowing and open. And some people move away, and some people leave or find another tradition or this or that. And other people come in and are welcomed and find a way to belong. So it's closed in that it's intact, and it's based on a lineage. And at the same time, it's open. You never know who's going to show up. And that is a wonderful thing as well in a sangha. And that's where sometimes the rub can come in. And that is part of our practice. It is inevitable. It is not something that can be avoided. And we don't want to be so closed that we don't have any kind of a rub as well. This is an important part of a sangha, the beauty, the pleasure, the companionship, the personal relationships that can come out of being together, dedicated to awakening and awareness and kindness and love. And at the same time, the inevitable rubs that allow us to make our spiritual idealism. And I always say that meditators are the most idealistic people in the world. Make our spiritual idealism actual so that it begins to become something real and tangible and lived and expressed rather than just idealism. So we bring it home, we bring it into something that is transformational in our willingness to embrace and learn and inquire and be with both the lovely as well as the more difficult. And this is how a community grows. We all have so big of an influence on one another, and we don't always even know it. You know, I am influenced by you, you are influenced by me, you are influenced by one another. And it's really helpful, it's really important to be with those who are aspiring in the same direction that you are, not to dismiss or shun anybody at all in this world, of course. And at the same time, to make sure that we are with those who have the qualities that we want to strengthen within ourselves. You know, the Buddha was asked how to strengthen the different paramis that I just spoke about. And he said, be with people who have those qualities. That's how you'll be able to strengthen those qualities within your own heart, within your own life, within your own being. And this is part of Sangha as well. We impact one another. We sometimes don't know how much we impact one another, but we absorb and we are influenceable and we have an impact and we are impacted as well. And this is what it means to live one life. Wise friends bring the teachings to life so that it's not just something written about or in the books. You know, we have to actually have people in our lives that inspire us as ways to bring the teachings to life. This is really important. We have an extraordinarily difficult situation in the world. And we hear a lot about people who are doing really terrible things, really, really destructive things. There are so many wonderful people in this world as well. Of all backgrounds and communities and histories and lineages and all of that. And that's what we can bond to beyond our individual community. our individual sanghas, this sangha of beings who are really dedicated to doing something of benefit in this world, using their lives well. So, getting to the end here, I'd like to end by reading you something. This is from quite a while ago. This is a story about a humpback whale who had become entangled in a spider web of crab traps and lines. She was weighted down by hundreds of pounds of traps that caused her to struggle to stay afloat. She also had hundreds of yards of line rope wrapped around her body, her tail, her torso, a line tugging in her mouth. A fisherman spotted her just east of the Farallon Islands outside the Golden Gate and radioed an environmental group for help. Within a few hours, the rescue team arrived and determined that she was so bad off, the only way to save her was to dive in and untangle her. They worked for hours with curved knives and eventually freed her. When she was free, the divers say, she swam in what seemed like joyous circles. She then came back to each and every diver, one at a time, and nudged them, pushed them gently around as she was thanking them. The guy who cut the rope out of her mouth said her eyes were following him the whole time, and he will never be the same. May you and all those you love be so blessed and fortunate to be surrounded by people who will help you get untangled from the things that are binding you. And may you always know the joy of giving and receiving gratitude. I pass this on to you, my friends, in the same spirit. May all beings peacefully abide in the here and now. May all beings rest, find refuge in loving kindness. May all beings live with a leap of trust and with compassion. May it be so. Thank you so much.